This podcast is for parents like you, navigating the world of neurodiversity with love and compassion. I'm a neurodivergent mother of three amazing neurodivergent children and a board-certified music therapist. Our mission is to create a supportive space where you feel understood, connected, and inspired. With practical tips, strategies, and resources, we'll help you and your child thrive in your unique way. Join us as we dive deep into the diverse world of neurodivergent individuals, exploring topics like ADHD, autism, dyslexia, sensory processing challenges, and more. We'll cover it all to empower, educate, and uplift both neurodivergent individuals and those who walk alongside them. Together, we'll create a world where every brain is valued and celebrated. We're excited to embark on this enlightening journey with you. We are your hosts, Samantha Foote and Lauren Ross, and this is the Every Brain is Different podcast. Welcome to the Every Brain is Different podcast. We're here with Esther Thane. Esther has specialized since 1996 in neurodivergent individuals and diverse needs. After over a decade on faculty at Capilano University, Esther continues to present at conferences, publish, consult, and hold workshops and in-services. In 2014, Esther completed Dr. Diane Austin's Music Psychotherapy Center in New York training program in advanced vocal psychotherapy. Her publication in the book, Voice Work in Music Therapy, focuses on her innovative method of vocal-led relaxation for children with autism. Esther created Meet in the Music music therapy curriculum, which is utilized by music therapists globally. Esther is executive director of ET Music Therapy in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, where the team serves 200 plus clients in their two studios, in schools, group homes, in-home, adult day programs, and telehealth. Esther has received numerous awards, including the Iconic Women Creating a Better World for All Award, presented by the Women Economic Forum in New Delhi, India in 2017, the Peer Recognition Award for Innovation and Advocacy, presented by the Canadian Association for Music Therapy in 2021, and the Luminous Alumni Award of Excellence presented by Capilano University in 2024. Welcome, Esther. We're so excited to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a great way to start my Friday morning.
I love it. Quite the list of accomplishments. So well done.
Well, I'm old.
You're like, I had the time.
Exactly.
So, Esther, can you tell us a little bit more about your experience, your journey to where you are today, and just how you got to where you are?
Well, how many hours have you got? As every, you know, music therapist has an origin story, I guess mine is that I knew I was always going to do music, but I didn't want to do the traditional music paths, like become a music teacher, a music educator, a performer, even though I do perform, but I didn't want that to be my trajectory. And it was just suggested to me, music therapy, on a whim. And I just kind of went for it. I had no idea what it entailed at all. But I just applied to university program. And I've really never looked back. And that first day of class where they showed us one of those old black and white Nordoff Robbins videos of working with autistic kids and diverse kids, I knew that that was going to be my channel, and that was going to be my specialization. The autistic and neurodivergent population has always fascinated me. They've always amazed me, and they continue to amaze me. So it's never a dull day as a music therapist working with neurodivergent individuals, and it's incredibly rewarding to help support them and just be a guide with them on their developmental personal journey.
I love it. We are the same. Like, I didn't know anything about music therapy, and I knew I wanted to do something in music and I wanted to do something in psychology, but I didn't want to be a teacher and I didn't want to be a performer. And I'm like, what else can I do? And then I randomly found music therapy on this website that, looking back on it, it did not describe music therapy well, but it got me into the field. So that's cool.
It was enough to hook you, right?
Yeah.
I think it was like this new thing that we'd never heard about that we went, you know, I think every music therapist, when they hear about music therapy first, it's like all of a sudden you feel, okay, that's home. That's yes. where I can live.
Yeah.
They created this career just for me.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. I love it. Can you just give us some examples of what you do with kids and adults who are neurodivergent? Like, how do you do music therapy with them?
Well, I'm very, you know, as I'm sure many of us are, I'm very holistic in my approach. My philosophies come from sensory integration, theory of mind, Greenspan, educational kinesiology, eurythmics. And I kind of try to bring that all together. I was trained a lot very closely with speech therapists, with occupational therapists. And I'm a real true believer that kids will integrate new skills and new information if it's coming from a place of inner motivation. So, you know, we do know, of course, a huge fundamental principle of music therapy is that we're using client preferred music. But I kind of take that to the next step where, you know, my team and I, we will assess for 3 to 4 weeks and just throw a bunch of different types of music experiences at the client and see what sticks. What do they gravitate towards? Are they more rhythmic based? Are they more movement based? Do they prefer strings instruments or stringed instruments or keyboard? Are they the kind of individual that just likes to jam and improvise from the moment they walk through the door till the moment they leave? Or do they prefer really structured music activities and interventions that help reassure them because of the routine, with maybe visual reinforcers and picture cards, etc.? So we kind of build the treatment plan around that. And then, of course, negotiate on a weekly basis using a schedule, visual schedule, again, to help reassure them and assist in self-regulation and engagement with the individual. So it's really a holistic approach, as I think most of us as music therapists do. But it's also one where I really feel, as of course, often kids who are neurodivergent, especially if they're nonverbal, they really struggle with sharing when they are dysregulated and what is dysregulating them. And time again, I think when I am supervising and supporting my staff, or I am presenting and doing in-services or workshops, the number one question is, how do you understand behaviors? What do you do with behaviors? What do you do when a child just, you feel like you're following them around the room and they don't even have any acknowledgement that you're even in the space? Or they will just throw every instrument down that you give them, or they're in crisis and they're screaming and they're clearly not regulated and they're in discomfort. And I really feel that the number one place to go to first is to look at the physiological needs. Yeah. And this is kind of where my, you know, background with sensory integration comes into play. I really feel like when a behavior occurs, it's because there's maybe something going on physiologically. Do they need some proprioceptive input? Are they over aroused? Are they overstimulated? Are they in need of vestibular input? Do they need complete withdrawal of the stimuli and just given a moment to pause? Do they need the reassurance too? I also really believe in intention as a music therapist, and especially with the neurodivergent community, I feel that they're just operating on a different plane than we are. And I'm very jealous of it because I think we all were there originally as a species where we intuited more. We had more telepathy. We picked up on people's energy more. And I think perhaps, and this is, you know, just a theory of mine, so don't crucify me about it if you don't believe it. But I really feel that because so many individuals who are neurodivergent struggle with understanding neurotypical societies, social cues, understanding the fine nuances of communication, that just like the person who is maybe deaf, they increase their other senses. And I feel like neurodivergent individuals pick up on that energy flow more. And just when, you know, when I think about, for example, when I was younger and practicing, I would, you know, first kind of point my finger at my clients when I didn't have a good day. And what is with the clients today? Oh, it must be barometric pressure change. And, you know, sometimes that is the actual reason, because they have those incredible sensitivities to our world, rhythm and environment, etc. But I always used to kind of first point my finger at them and what was wrong with the clients and why was my day so bad? It's session after session, I wasn't connecting. And then a light kind of went off in my brain at some point, and I started to look inwardly and realize that it was my energy that wasn't organized and that I wasn't coming to the sessions and to the interactions, these beautiful human interactions, with a more Zen energy. And once I started organizing my energy before that client walked through the door, that never happened again. And another example is, you know, if a child is nonverbal and they're in crisis and they're crying, even if you don't even know what their level of receptive language comprehension is, to be able just with your intention in your voice and in your words, say, I know, you know, I know you're not feeling good right now. I'm here to help you. And that started just opening up this realm of possibility. And it kind of trickled down and permeated through other facets of my life as well. You know, I had a very great colleague and friend that I used to teach with at Capilano University up here in Vancouver. And she's done energy work for like 35, 40 years. And I was always complaining to her that that I was always having issues with my computer, that it was always crashing, that it would never do what I want. It was losing things that I wrote down. I would ask, you know, my husband to come into the room and I would walk away from the computer and it would work for him. And then I'd re-enter the room and all of a sudden it would crash again. And I kind of termed it EMD, electromagnetic disorder. I was, you know, convinced again, pointing the finger, oh, it's, you know, something going on electrical wise. And my colleague said, well, Esther, you've got big energy and you've got a real big presence and you need to learn how to organize that when you approach technology and your computer, because energy also transcends, as we know, across distances. So even on a computer, when we are having a telehealth session with an individual, our energy is being transferred through the screen. At least I believe that again. That's my own personal kind of opinion. But that was a real game changer for me, was approaching sessions and approaching individuals as every interaction being a sacred one, and that I have to feel Zen and calm and grounded in my own body and in my own mind. And all of a sudden, it just opened up the most beautiful sessions. And I really feel I think that's important. If you're working with anybody, whether you're working with seniors or mental health, or, you know, people just need to know on a very subliminal level they need to feel love, and they need to feel your love and understanding and your calmness. And that can really help calm them and create a container for your interaction.
I love that. I think you brought up a really good point about your energy and just having that calm energy. I think that's important for parents. I think that's a great strategy for parents too, to realize like, what energy are you bringing to the interaction when your child is overwhelmed or your child is not regulated? So for example, last night, I don't know what my son was doing, why he thought this was a good idea, but he threw a squishmallow at my, like, I have this thing right here that has like these planters on it. And one of the planters just fell over and busted into like tons of pieces, right? And
right, I'm like, trigger for you.
I was like, and I did not react appropriately the first time. And I was like, why? What are you doing? Like, why did you do that? And then I was like, whoa. Like I've said before on here, do I love him more than the broken pot? Or do I love the broken pot more than him? Like, what am I willing to do to tarnish our relationship? Is the pot worth it? And so then I reeled it back in. I was like, okay, it was an accident. But just tell me what was going through your mind, like, when you decided to do that. And then we, like, reeled it back in. But as soon as I yelled, he was like, ah! And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I'm dysregulated. He's getting dysregulated. He's afraid. Like, he looked like he was afraid. And I'm like, I do not want my child to act like that. Like, to feel that with me, you know? Yeah. So our energy can definitely affect what's going on in our kids. And as music therapists too, like, our energy affects the kid that we're working with. I love that you said that.
Hey there, it's Samantha. Are you a dedicated parent overwhelmed with navigating the unique challenges of raising a neurodivergent child? You find it tough to understand impulsive behaviors, manage transitions, address educational concerns, handle sensory stimulation, and navigate social interaction struggles. The good news is you aren't alone. Here at Every Brain is Different, we're excited to announce our new membership program, Parenting Your Neurodivergent Child. This is a community of parents working to enhance connections with their kids and gain a deeper understanding of their unique needs. With expert insights on positive parenting strategies and neuroaffirming practices, you'll have concrete strategies to help your child succeed. You'll have opportunities to ask questions, hear from other parents, and feel empowered as a parent, and finally feel peace in your home. Join us on the second and third Thursdays of each month on Zoom. Visit www.everybrainisdifferent.com for more details. Let's embark on this journey together.
Do you have any other parenting strategies or tips for parents that you would recommend when they're with their child?
Well, you know, when you talked about that situation that happened with your son, I mean, bless all parents out there, whether they are parents of neurotypical or neurodivergent individuals or just diverse kids. You know, parenting, I'm not saying anything new, is the toughest job in the world. And I am certainly and have been certainly guilty of it. And still to this day, with not being regulated enough with my kids. And my kids are older. And it's a whole new world when you've got, you know, a college student and a 15-year-old son. It's like you thought, oh, you're going to get kind of over the things that are going to push your buttons and trigger you when they're younger. But, you know, a whole new myriad of things come up, like mocking and you know, not following through on something that you asked them to do 10 million times in an hour. And it is really hard to stay grounded. It's probably the hardest thing, I think, to do as a parent, is to take those 10 breaths and stay calm. Incredibly difficult. I think advice for me with parents in general, whether it is neurodivergent parents or not, it's self-care. Take those times for self-care. And for me, when my kids were younger, my self-care was leaving the house and going on a run. Because in a way, kind of, I don't know, somehow very ironically, I felt like I was running away and running away from my problems, but also running through them and getting somewhere and seeing the miles or kilometers that I had, because I'm in Canada, so we're kilometers, that I had put behind me, and feeling a sense of accomplishment while simultaneously doing something so proactive for my body, allowing me to have that endorphin release, relaxing my muscles. And then that really helped regulate me in order to be with my children. And I think that's important, you know, for therapists. We always talk about self-care too. And we never do enough of that. And for me, a huge self-care thing that happened early on as a music therapist was designating my music for myself and not sharing that with my clients. Having a real segmented library of my music that I just keep for me, even though sometimes I, you know, at the beginning, because of course, in the beginning of your music therapy career, you're like pulling from everywhere, right? To build resources. And you think, oh, I love this piece. Oh, I love Samuel Barber's Adagio. And I love this piece of music. And oh, I could bring that into a session and I could, you know, do creative movement to music with that. And I love this U2 song. And for me, that was a real mistake. It was very successful because, again, that energy transfer happened where my clients could feel how much I love that piece of music and they could share in it and they saw that I was willing to share that. So it's a real catch-22, right? Because it was very successful, but at the same time, it tainted it for me. If I was using music at work, then I had built this association when I was listening to it for leisure. And, you know, music is our world. And, you know, I was just at a presentation last night and I was talking about literally how my statement was, music is my sustenance. For me, music is as much sustenance as food and oxygen and sleep. And I needed to learn how to be more selfish about keeping what brought me to this field in the first place and not feel guilty about that, and keep that for me, something special and something tucked away. And, you know, as musicians and as music therapists, if we're really well-rounded, we love lots of different genres. And we can appreciate and find the joy and grow to love other music, client preferred music as well. So I think if you're coming to it with a really open mind, you know, I used to be way more of a stuck up music snob when I was younger, especially as a teenager. I'd only listen to what we called, and this is going to really date me, but, you know, back in the 80s and early 90s, alternative music. You know, it was like I was only going to listen to anything that was never on the radio. So, and for me, growing up in a small little town in Alberta, that meant things like the Smiths and the Sex Pistols and the Cure and the Clash and Billy Bragg and New Order. And I was so determined to get away from the norm of everything else that I was listening or hearing on the radio that was like what I kind of call and still think to this day is bubblegum pop, you know. I couldn't appreciate anything else. And I mean, I appreciate classical music because I was always classically trained since I was a young child as well. But I think over the years, my genres have expanded and I've appreciate. I don't know if it also comes with getting older, but I appreciate and find the beauty in other genres of music and music that a client is excited about. I really make the effort to be as excited or, you know, to explore what that world looks like for me. Because again, I think it's back down to energy, and that's what's going to really do it.
Yeah, exactly. I love that you have music that's just for you and not for the clients, because it does. Like my music on Apple iTunes or Apple Music, whatever it's called, it's all like client-based music because I use it so much, like in sessions. And so I go on, if I just push shuffle, like it'll be like most repeated songs, and I'll just have to listen to all the songs that I do in sessions. I'm like, this is not relaxing, because no. It's just putting me back right into the sessions and thinking about the sessions and, oh, what can I do here? And what can I do here? So yeah, yeah. I definitely appreciate that you said that. Do you have any resources for parents or that you have yourself or just suggestions?
Yeah. You know, as you mentioned in my bio, I've created a vocal led relaxation that's available for purchase on my website. It's called Rooted in Music, and the music is quite sophisticated in the way that it's, it really can be used with young kids, for parents, for self-care, for bedtime routines with their child to lie down and experience the relaxation together. For teens, it works for adults. It's being used in seniors' homes. It was originally created for autistic kiddos, but it's even in the past been used in dental offices for people who are neurodivergent or kids in general that have some anxiety about a dental procedure, to just have, you know, the hygienist or whoever put it on headphones for them to calm them. It's got like a 5-minute version, a 10-minute version, a 20-minute version to transition to another activity, and a 20-minute to fall asleep. And I think what makes it a little bit different is that I'm singing all of the directives. I found there to be a real disconnect between music and then the spoken voice walking you through, okay, you take a deep breath. So everything is sung with a really beautiful, consistent piano accompaniment underneath that's supporting it. So that's available for download and purchase on the website. It's very cost effective. It's $20 Canadian, so it's even cheaper in American. And it's also part of my music therapy curriculum, which is called Meet in the Music. And that's for music therapists as a resource, filled with over 165 different interventions, all coming with sheet music, instructional videos, audio files, the picture cards, everything you need in order to build your own bag of tricks for your own practice is available on a cloud platform as well called Unitas TI.
Yeah, I use Unitas TI and I use Meet in the Music, and it's amazing. And they like help you write your goals and the assessment. It's fantastic. Yeah. So where can people find you online if they want to connect with you, learn more?
So if you're a parent and you're looking for the relaxation, you can go to etmusictherapy.com. There's a whole landing page about the relaxation. There's actually a whole landing page about the Meet the Music curriculum. If you're a music therapist and you're interested in the curriculum, you can go to mundopato.com /MITM. So that's MUNDOPATO/ and then MITM for short, for Meet the Music.
Awesome. Well, we are so grateful to have you on the show today. You've taught us a lot. I love everything you said. And yeah, thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thanks. Thanks for starting my day on such a nice, casual, conversational note. Now I got to have more structured meetings, but it was really nice to see you guys. And thanks so much for having me on your podcast.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. You're amazing. I loved it.
Okay. She's amazing. What did you think of our first music therapist besides me on the show?
I loved her. I think it was great. There's a few things that really stood out to me. The individual person-centered approach of what does this child need? What do they like? What do they enjoy? What instruments? All of that. It's not an all one box fits all. So I really liked that. And then you guys are using the word energy. And in my own world, I call them vibes. And that's something I talk about and that I say, especially with staff, like just because they're nonverbal does not mean that they do not sense the vibes that you are putting out. And I was like, so you need to check yourself with that. And like, just because they're nonverbal, you don't know how much they can actually comprehend a lot of the times. And so I kind of remind them to be mindful. So be aware of the presence, what's going on with you, what's going on with them, and to be that calm. And then also that getting to a state of mindfulness is not easy to do. And that's why self-care is really important. To be able to, again, help regulate yourself so that you can help regulate others. And so I think she talked about having music just for her. And I think sometimes parents and caregivers and people feel guilty when they take time for themselves, and you shouldn't. Like, you need to take care of yourself. You need to have something for yourself so that you can be your best for other people. And I think we a lot of times forget that. And I think that guilt is very strong and overpowers some things. And so a reminder that it's okay. It's okay to have something that's just for you. And you need that in order to be the best for others. And so those were my three big takeaways. So
yeah. Amen to everything you said. It was, I love, well, of course, in music therapy, you hope that all music therapists are, you know, using client preferred music and doing the assessment, like she said, and, you know, putting out positive energy or vibes. And just because someone isn't speaking, definitely realize that they know what you're saying. And if they don't understand everything you're saying, they understand the vibes that you're putting off.
Yeah. And with that, she mentioned intention. And I think that's really important. So a lot of times I go, even if they're not going to respond or you don't think they have the comprehension, when you're doing something with an individual, you need to be talking to them. Whether they hear or understand or not, it's the intention behind it. And so I really like that she brought that up as well, because that's really important and that contributes to the energy, the vibes that you're putting out. And I agree. I agree with her that she thinks that maybe they have, you know, that increased sensory input elsewhere. And so to just be, again, really mindful of those things. So.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let us know how you all liked the show this week and what your thoughts are. Any feedback? Happy Autism Acceptance Month, because I'm not calling it Awareness Month. And yeah, let us know. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode. We hope the discussion on neurodiversity has provided you with support, understanding, and inspiration. If you found our podcast valuable, please share it with others who may benefit from our insights and leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Hit the follow button and let's keep exploring the fascinating world of neurodiversity. Click the link in our show notes to visit our website for a free download of 3 tips for a stronger relationship with your child.